Welcome to Maxed Out Man, helping you become the man you were made to be.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Davis from the Maxed Out Man podcast. It's episode number 26. I'm here with Christopher Coles from the wholly owned and operated, I don't know if you call it a company, organization, and manhusbanddad.com. He has got tons of stuff going on, speaker, influencer, I guess we could call him, and kind of lay minister, if you want to say that too, but I'll let him fill in the gaps. I appreciate you being here, Christopher. Thanks for joining me.
Sure, Kevin, I appreciate it. Well, wholly owned and operated is it's a registered 501c3, give the IRS their pound of flesh. And that was a learning curve, I'll tell you what, doing that. But so it is incorporated so that, everything's above board, I guess.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So that's where I hail from, if you will.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about that. Tell me what, because I was reading your bio, and it looks like you've, kind of started in one way, and then that was absorbed by by the official 503C. So just kind of give me that whole backstory and what you've got going on.
Absolutely, sure. So Man, Husband, Dad really came about, 2023, right? So about 10 years ago. And you're probably familiar with Thoreau and his Most Men Lead Lives of Quiet Desperation and that sort of stuff. And
yeah. I was,
40-something and had was kind of in that place. I'd been a stay-at-home dad at that point for about 5 years. And we can get into how that all came about. But I was really kind of trying to figure me out, while raising three boys, and the first thing a man thinks of is, well, if I don't have it together, what
right.
What am I teaching them, And so I had, I'd always been a reader. I've always been learning from other people, particularly the guys who know something, And I had found a spiritual director at that time who I went and saw, and he was putting on a retreat. He's a Franciscan friar. Mm. So think Friar Tuck, only slimmer.
Maybe without the little circle haircut, or did he?
that's correct. He's not what I forget what those are called, but yes, he doesn't have that. Half the time I see him in street clothes. So I went on a retreat, he had been all over the world, and has written several books. And I'll tell you, his name is Father Albert Haas, and he's just a great guy. And he, in his presentations and stuff, was talking about when he was a first-year novitiate, figuring out should he be a friar or not. He decided that he wasn't going to be, so he went to the superior and said, I'm not a Saint Francis. I'm not, commune with the animals, build my church. I'm just not that guy. And the superior said, well, that's great, Albert, because God already has a Francis. He needs an Albert, I realized, because, I was a motivational speaker when I was 23 years old. And this was almost 20 years later than I've gone through this retreat, because I had wanted to be real famous. I was going to be the next Zig Ziglar. I mean, great guy. I was getting, Brian Tracy, Robbins, a lot of these guys, but here I was, 20 years after being a motivational speaker, a paid one in college, wondering, well, what, you have your time during the retreat to go, think. And so I did. And I wrote down all these things I was, and entrepreneur, speaker. I even put down, you know, the big things, liar, you know, all these things that I could identify myself as. And took up 2-3 pages of my journal. And in there, I also put man, husband, and dad. And I'm looking at all these things, and I wrote my name down at the bottom of it. And I realized God was telling me, Christopher, I've got all these. I've got entrepreneurs. I've got liars. You know, I've got Zig Ziglars. You know, what I need is a Christopher Coles. And I crossed out all the things that, you know, everybody else was, and the things that were left was a man, a husband, and a dad.
Yeah.
I did not like that answer. Because I wanted to be all this stuff. And then, you know, I realized I needed to be, you know, a man first. And so we, you know, I started exploring these things. And since then, have essentially been teaching myself and my boys things that I had been probably teaching in the, you know, without really knowing it, I guess, teaching them that you have to be a man before you can be anything else. You have to be a man before you're a husband, or if God calls you to a different vocation, a priest, a brother, you know, a single guy, whatever. You know, you can't make that decision until you know you're a man. Now, we know we're men. We have those chromosomes, you know. So that's pretty obvious, but you have to at some point become the man, you know, because the same chromosomes are in boys, you know, there's a difference. So, you can't have a manly vocation as a husband or a dad or anything unless you're a man first. So kind of just discovering that was a big deal. And I was raised by a man, and I use, you know, there's a man, capital M, and there's a man, small M,
okay.
You know, and the small M guys are guys who, you know, eventually, I guess don't know who they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I was raised by someone like that, a dilettante, if you will, smartest man in the world. But couldn't teach me really what I needed to know. And oddly enough, you know, his mother, my grandmother, raised me for several years. And all during my teenage years, I spent every summer with her. And I tell people she taught me how to hold my fork and hold my tongue. I'm really good at holding my fork. So, fast forward, and we can talk, we do man ceremonies and stuff like that. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that, but fast forward to 2019, and my wife Beth and I started Wholly Owned and Operated, and it was really just that we were intent on helping people grow in their Catholic faith.
Okay.
She's got a long pedigree of Catholicism. She's got a master's in catechetics and evangelizations, and I've got a pretty face. So we'd been working on that for a year, and then what happened in 2020, you know, the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been doing social media marketing for quite some time, and had, on the same day, Beth's working full-time for a local parish. On the same day, she gets notice that they're cutting her down to 10 hours and cutting her pay of that 10 hours that's left by 10%. And my clients all say that they're going to take stuff in-house. So in one day, our income dropped just over 94%.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a challenge.
But we spent a lot of time being who we're supposed to be. You know, we were ready to launch Wholly Owned and Operated. Beth and I are sitting at lunch, and I said, this is God giving us the opportunity to, you know, put up or shut up. So we did. And in 2 weeks, we had a website. We launched on Holy on Palm Sunday of 2020, and really haven't looked back. And what was really neat is I tell people, I teach that if you are who you're supposed to be, God will provide for you the things that He wants you to do to support that being.
Mm-hmm.
Within 6 weeks of starting Wholly Owned and Operated, we had about $7,500 in donations, just to do everything from the incorporating to putting food on the table. And it was a great lesson. We've had those little lessons along the way, but it was a great lesson in affirming that, you know, the being is first, the doing comes later. And in the bio, for instance, that I sent you, you notice it doesn't say that Christopher is a business owner. Christopher has run 12 businesses, you know, in the last 30 years. It says he's a man, husband, dad. And when I introduce myself at cocktail parties, well, here in Texas, it's brisket parties, yeah. I guess. And you know, if a warm Miller Lite is a cocktail, you know. And I tell people that I don't do IB. I said, I'm a man, I'm a husband, and I'm a dad. And I do whatever the Lord provides for me to do to support that.
Mm.
It's a simple equation that took me about 44 years to figure out, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's it. And, you know, that's the last 10 years, you know, and obviously things built up for 40 years prior to that, you know, since I was that motivational speaker, I'm comfortable in front of crowds now to share what, because I mean, I was 23. What do I know? Hey, you know, I'm talking to high schoolers and I'm quoting Stephen Covey. That's, yeah. You know, and they're paying me for it, you know?
Right.
And, which I know Covey would be glad to hear that high schoolers were getting it, you know? But it led to this. It all led to this.
That's great. And I should point out that it's Wholly Owned and Operated, H-O-L-Y, not W-H-O-L-L-Y, I guess is how you spell it. That Wholly. You
know, I had one of those companies was a computer services and web hosting and web design company that I had for 16 years. And I knew right away that if we're going to have the H-O-L-Y, we should also have the W-H-O-L-L-Y.
Mm-hmm.
So when people hear it and they decide to type that in, they'll still come to us.
Yeah, I've owned a web development company since 98. So, and we don't do a ton with it anymore. But yeah, I have way too many domains that I always think, well, I'll just pick that up. And then, you know, $15 a year, $20 a year. And all of a sudden you're like, do I really need this domain? But no, those definitely are super important. So are you using your motivational speaker background now, I assume, or are you continuing to do group organization, you know, group speaking and that kind of stuff?
Sure. We do retreats. You know, we're a tag team, Beth and I. We have a podcast that we do. It comes out every Thursday. We're starting our fourth year. It's called On the Road to Perfection. It doesn't take long to hear Beth's compassion, her smarts, her ability to teach and communicate with anybody at any level of understanding, and to recognize that, I wouldn't say that I'm the comic relief because I'm not that funny, but I'm the average person,
yeah.
You know? We have a good back and forth just talking about life, living our faith in this world, while trying not to be of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, some secular things. We don't pay a lot of attention to the news, so we don't cover a lot of that because I'm not going to be judged at the end of my life on if I know, you know, Cal Ripken's box scores. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, so you've been married just 1 year shy of us. I got married in '95. You got married in '96, and it, you know, I always try to be my wife's hype man. as they, you know, in the rap, yeah, in the rap, yeah, world, that's
finish, that, finish the last word of the rhyme. Naturally.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You try to be the hype man. And your kids, I would guess, how old are your boys then?
23. Yeah. 23, 18 and 16.
Okay. So you're still in the thick of it with the teenagers. My girls are 25, just turned 25 and 23. So We're kind of in that awesome empty nesters thing.
We got a great plan for that.
Yeah, I don't really understand the huge trepidation or lamentation of the lamenting of when the kids are out of the house. I mean, I love my children, but I love them from afar.
Yeah, no, I get that. We, you know, my wife and I just went camping last week, and the 16-year-old went to Boys State, and the 18-year-old was a counselor at Boys State. And our 23-year-old has an internship with in the Defense Department. And so he held down the fort at the house, giving him kind of a sense, because he's going to start working for them in January, giving him a sense of the house on my own, you know, that sort of stuff. The other two are taken care of, and you know, Beth and I go and disconnect. You
yeah.
know, we went to a state park, identified 31 different bird species, you know, and we have a plan for an RV in about 15 months. And, you know, the youngest, he skipped a grade in school. So he's going to graduate a year early. And so he's going to spend a year with us on the road, yeah. Which for him is great. He's going to see a lot of this country and learn a lot, you know, about it. Boots on the ground, and we're gonna change our backyard whenever we want.
That's awesome. Yeah, in 2008, we actually, my kids were in fifth and sixth grade. We actually pulled them out of school. We homeschooled as they got into sixth and seventh grade, but we pulled them out of school, and we did a 34 state tour with an RV. We didn't have a motorhome. Yeah, it was a blast. They, you know, 12,000 miles in about 100 days, and all up and, you know, all up and down the East Coast, which is, you know, American history 101, you know, from,
sure,
you know, Colonial Williamsburg and Washington, D.C. up through Boston. And
yeah,
you know,
Boston, Concord, Lexington, all that. Yeah,
great. Yeah, all that stuff. So that's a great plan. I think you'll really enjoy it. We have a motorhome now. I would love to do it. Love to do it again with just my bride. But, you know, we haven't done that as of yet. So let's go back to your kind of, you know, it's funny that you say that, you know, capital M versus little M. My daughter is hard of hearing. She's half deaf. So she's what they call single-sided deaf. And it's funny because in that community, which most people don't actually know, there are big D deaf and little D deaf. And it's kind of like this rite of passage. And there's this kind of way to get to be able to call yourself big D deaf, and there's like these requirements and all that stuff. So it made me think of that. Walk me through the difference and kind of what you're teaching on, you know, what it, and honestly just the way that we're defining how to be a man and the way that you taught your boys to do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm half blind. There's,
okay,
you know, this eye isn't winking at you. It's not closed or anything like that, you know, on purpose. I lost my sight about 20 years ago. And my son, my middle son, is an ASL aficionado. He's learned American Sign Language and is pursuing that as a career. It's a stepping stone career because he wants to, you know, be in real estate and, you know, own the world, you know. So we've learned a lot about that culture as well. And it's interesting. You know, I had to distinguish. I wrote a book, which I haven't published yet, about 6 years ago. In fact, if I had published it, I'd be on the third edition. And the third edition would say, you know, attention to the stuff in the first edition. So I had to distinguish, you know, when you're talking about man versus man. Again, you know, hearkening back to the Thoreau, and I don't really quote him a lot, you know, just he's useful in a conversation like this. I think of my father, for instance, as I mentioned, a smart man. But I learned from somebody. I was in Amway back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And did fairly well at it. In fact, I became a 1,000 pin the last day Amway was Amway before it became Quickstar. You know, I was very proud of it.
Oh, wow.
And wasn't just me, of course, it was my wife as well, you know. But I remember sitting down with an Upline Emerald, who's a good guy, and I told him about, you know, my father, the divorce, the alcoholism, there's some abuse in there, there's, it's a story. Mm-hmm. And I told him that story. And I said to him, I said, you know what my father did, you know, he played a good game with the cards he was dealt. Mm-hmm. He looked at me and he said, Terry was the name. He said, Christopher, he sat down at the table. He chose that game. And that gave me a perspective. It really did give me a perspective. You know, a few years earlier, Stephen Covey had told me that because I know the past that I came from, I can change my future.
Yeah.
I really found out. I felt found out. I was walking across campus reading a book, and I looked around like people were looking at me differently because I'd been hiding behind all this. Poor me. This is what's happened to me. This is what I've got. This is what's going on. It's never been changed. Blah, blah, blah. And so I realized we have a choice of what table we're going to sit down to. Now, you know, of course, yes, we're all born and we all have certain circumstances, nature versus nurture, that sort of thing. But Covey's point was you can change your nurture. The small M man just goes through life without really contemplating who he's supposed to be. It's grow up, graduate high school, you go to college, get a job, retire, die. You know, that's the formula, right? You know, I went to college for 8 years and I walked out the semester before I was supposed to graduate, and never looked back, started my own business. Cause I realized, I'm not supposed to be in college. It would have been real helpful 8 years and $150,000 earlier.
That's right.
If someone had told me that, you know? So a man in the capitalized sense of the word knows who he is supposed to be. It doesn't mean that he is who he's supposed to be because none of us are.
Right.
Exactly. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew's 5:48. Jesus says, "Be perfect, as your Father in heaven is perfect." Well, that's a big thing. I can't be God,
right?
What does that mean? And I take that as meaning being who you're supposed to be, because God is who He's supposed to be. He's perfect. He is who He's supposed to be. He is and does God.
You know? Yep.
So we don't need more gods, just like we don't need more Francis's or, you know, right. Ziglars, right?
Yeah.
We are here in this unique time, in this unique place, as unique individuals for a purpose, for a reason. And the capital M man is pursuing that perfection, who he's supposed to be, based on his aptitudes and the virtues of a man. In pursuit of that perfection, what was Alexis like 30 years ago? A relentless pursuit of perfection, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Great tagline, can't use it, they own it, right? So, be who you're supposed to be is the mantra for the capital M man. I have to show you this. This came in the mail yesterday. It's from my son's school. This is their magazine that they send to everybody who sends them money, right? And right on the front, let's see. Yeah. Be who God made you to be.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, well, yeah, you know. Somebody must have heard me walking across campus, you know. Look, I slip up all the time. Mm-hmm. I am very bad at being. but I'm better than I was yesterday. And I'm much better than I was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I could have spent the last 10 years not even trying.
Right.
I could have spent the last 10 years not even knowing I could be who I was supposed to be. Most men, capital or lowercase m, I think, don't know who they're supposed to be. So, you know, 15 years ago, I had a $72,000 a year contract with my computer services company. Things were going great. My oldest was 10 years old. And then, you know, the headmaster at this private school was canned right in the middle of the day. You know, the board walked in, said, get your stuff and go. And which was really weird because he's a great guy, you know. And then the dominoes started falling, and I knew my services was one of those dominoes.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So I prepared. The day it came, I only had one thing to take out of the office, me. And I went to Beth, and they said, now what? And a few days later, we went to church. We went to a church that we'd never gone to before, because the boys were out of town. And so we said, well, let's go over there. You know, we went, we sat in the front, we always do. And at the end, the priest made an announcement, please pray for us as we continue to look for our director of religious education, which is exactly what Beth was qualified for.
Oh, okay.
2 weeks later, she's working at the church. She's bringing home the bacon, and I got nothing, you know? And I've, you know, of course the entrepreneurial spirit is always there. So, but I've been at home since then, running the home, running the businesses, and, 5 years after that is when I discovered, you know, that God needed a man, husband, and dad. And that's why he's got me at home to learn all about that. So here I was doing all this stuff and being all the stuff that I'd never planned on. But I tell my boys and have told them, and when this got started, I told them, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. But I'm learning to love it because it's what God wants. And he knows better. And he also knows that I've got skills and stuff that he wants me to share. He just wants me to share them in different ways. You know, I could do the Zig Ziglar pumping the pump, you know, out on stage. Or I could talk about what works for me. Mm-hmm. And so he's opened those doors, you know, 10 years after I thought it would be, you know, 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be on stage talking to him. So in the process of becoming the man and discerning, you know, what it really means to be a husband and a dad, and I make that distinction between dad and father. I don't know if it was Dan Clark. I know I heard him first say, you know, it takes anybody can be a father. It takes a real special guy to be a dad,
mm-hmm.
you know. Dad, capital D, for instance, is, I'm kind of jumping. You can't be a dad if you're not a husband. That's mm-hmm. my perspective, you know. And if you discern that you're supposed to be a husband, you have to discern that that also means you're going to be a dad.
Mm.
Whether you're going to be a dad to your own children biologically or adopted children or children in the neighborhood, there is a certain responsibility that we have. You know, growing up in I had a best friend in Ohio for 8 years that my father knew but never met his mom. But I went over to their house 2 blocks away every day after school. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that Lula Gale could tan my hide if I messed up. You know, you know, and I know my father figured that was okay if she did. You know?
Right.
She was a mom with capital M, you know. So, you know, being that dad, being that husband, all capital means you know who you're supposed to be, and are pursuing that. So when I tell my kids that I don't like it, but I'm but I love it. And now I'm to the point where I love it and I love it.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, as Saint Ignatius said, when you are in God's will, you have a sense of peace and freedom. And that's what I've got. I don't have that that sense of quiet desperation. You know, now, yeah, do I still have frustrations? So I say, yeah, I, you know, my wife and I had a tiff this morning, you know? you know, and, but I got a little thing from her, text from her just before you and I got started. She said, I'm praying for you. And I know she always is, you know?
Yeah.
And because these capital letters mean something. I think to some extent they've been the words that've been co-opted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when was the last time we saw a positively portrayed dad on TV?
Yeah, they're always the bumbling idiots or the weak ones, or you know, yeah. They definitely there's not a lot of respect there, at least from the Hollywood standpoint of a dad for sure.
They've all become Barney Fifes and Al Bundys instead of, you know, Andy Griffiths, you know.
Yep.
And so men get this sense that they are worthless by the media that portrays them as such, and so they don't have to be worthwhile husbands and dads. And in fact, if they, you know, put their head above the crowd, they're going to get hit with a tomato.
Yeah.
And well, in spite of the resistance, we're still called to be who we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so teaching the boys this, it's been, you know, cause it was a leap of faith for me. I got the Lord said, boom, you know, and I said, okay, what do I do with this? And it was essentially practice it. If you believe it, practice what you preach, right?
Right. So 100%.
Yeah. So we did. And the real big turnaround in our, not in our family, but in realizing that this really is the deal. My oldest son, graduated from high school, and during that time was doing the college, you know, looking at colleges and stuff like that. But we talked about, you know, until you're a man, we can't determine what you're supposed to do, you know. Well, he became a man. We have a man ceremony. We really recognize that, because how many men are actually told you're a man by their own dad?
Right.
And he's the only person who can tell them, you know. So my son wanted to go to all his life. He wanted to go to Texas A&M University. We live in the shadow of Texas A&M. But he also had other desires, other things. So we talked about, we let the Lord give him all these indications on what he wanted to do with his life and all that sort of stuff, what he wanted to do to support being a man.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a gap year, and then he was accepted at A&M. But prior to that, he had told me, you know, he was applying to Franciscan University at Steubenville, Ohio, and it's a Catholic college, Catholic university. And he said, you know, Dad, I'm not going to apply because we can't afford it.
Mm.
And I looked at him. These words are coming out of my mouth while at the same time I'm saying, you're right, we can't. You
know, I said, right, yeah.
I said, son, if God wants you to go to Franciscan, if that's who you're supposed to be as a Franciscan man at that time of your life, he does not deny that which he ordains.
Mm.
So he said, okay. He applied. And, you know, it's $30,000 a year. It's not a super expensive private school, but it's more expensive than the state school 6 miles away from here.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
So he applied and he got accepted in A&M. He got accepted at Franciscan, which was great news. At the same time, I'm thinking, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know, and he opened up the letter, and said, congratulations, you've been accepted to Franciscan University, and you have qualified for the Dean's Scholarship, this scholarship, this scholarship, this scholarship, this scholarship,
wow.
to the point where it was only going to cost us $4,000.
That's huge.
Yeah. I looked at him and I said, where's God want you to go?
Yeah, that's pretty affirming when you not only get accepted, but you've got it, you know, pretty well covered for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, dads, I hear a lot of dads say that, well, I'm my kid's best friend, and I'm sad for that.
Hmm.
There's 8 billion people on this planet who can be our child's friend. There's only one person who can be their dad.
Right.
And that's a significant, special, unique relationship. Just like, and you might hear more that moms are friends or best friends with their daughters. And that saddens me a bit as well, you know? So you asked, you know, the small M versus big M, you know, culturalized, kind of in the examples and stories, you know, a best friend would say, cool, A&M, that's great. You know, we'll still be neighbors. Let's be roommates, you know. But my son's going to school, you know, 1,300 miles away, actually 2 hours away from where I grew up in a thoroughly dysfunctional family, and only about 35 minutes away from my grandmother's house, you know. The best friend wouldn't say, sure, dude, you know, move out across the country, you know, it'll be great, you know. but the best friend will then say, hey, that's cool, Franciscan, and it's pretty much paid for. That's awesome, you know, but he's not the one who's going to necessarily guide him.
Right.
To the godly decision or what happens when guys get together, you know. Yeah. I could tell stories, right?
Yeah.
So that the small D dad is friends with his kids. Now mine, I call him buddy, you know, hey buddy, you know, like, you know, I got special nicknames for him and all that sort of stuff. But I'm dad.
Yeah. And there's a delineation between, you know, friendship. And as you're, you know, my kids are gotten, like I said, 25 and 23. And now we are, our relationship is transitioning to more of an adult type friendship. Yeah. How, you know, however, it's funny because I gotta, you know, we're recording this midweek after Father's Day. I got a text on Sunday from my daughter who, dude, I mean, I kind of broke down and cried after this text, but you know, she's gone through some weird relationship stuff, you know, and to her admission, by her own admission, she's made some poor choices. But she pointed out that, hey, this is, you've taught me by how you love mom, what a man is supposed to look like, what that husband, you know, is supposed to look like. And then, you know, hopefully, and she mentioned, you know, what a dad's supposed to look like, and father and husband. And that's where the teaching component still exists. And that will always be there, that's a difference between the, you know, the small D dad who's just like, yeah, go do whatever you want, you know, have as many boyfriends as you need to have, and right, don't, yeah. You know, because I've flat out told her, and she doesn't, you know, they're adults, right? Like, they have to make their own decisions, but I flat out said, this is not the right one. This is a bad idea. Usually it's as a result of her asking me that question and then completely ignoring my advice until it finally dawns on her, you know, 2 years later, unfortunately, that I was right.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely a delineation. I love that. I love that whole concept of big D, little D, big H, little H, big M, little M, because there's a, you know, even when you're writing, that's called title case, right? Like that's there's a title versus which the title comes. There's a nobility associated with it. There's, you know, with all the rights and privileges, you know, here's your title with all the rights and privileges that come with it. You know, whatever that, you know, when they knight someone or when they give you a degree or, you know, all of those things. With a title comes rights, privileges and responsibilities versus just, you know, just as this is kind of my thing, right? Like I'm just a man or I'm just a dad, all little d.
You know, and nothing's going to change the fact that you have 30 years on your daughters.
Right.
You know, and oddly enough, you've lived with them as long as they've lived with them, you know?
Right.
So you have perspective. And I've told my boys, look, you'll get older and you may ask for my opinion. You may not. I'm still going to give it. You yep. don't have to follow it. But I've got you on experience. And part of my responsibility is to be your dad. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. And my father said that as soon as you're 18, he's done. And he lived by that mantra, you know. So that's very foreign to me, because I just can't turn it off. My my oldest, Saturday, I guess. No, it must have been Sunday or maybe, I don't know, you know.
Getting older. A few days ago.
Yeah. And said, you know, I'd kissed Beth and we're very affectionate. You know, I got no problem kissing my wife and telling her I love her. And we send little things on text. And, you know, we just say love to each other. You know, it means more.
Right.
You know? And yeah. He said, I'm just really glad that you and mom are affectionate with each other, you know, because I just don't see that. And I don't, you know, and it lets me know that everything's okay. And it helps me to know who I'm, you know, looking for. You know, similar to the text that you got, you know, those are golden. You know, when we grow up, we all say, when our parents do something or invoke some punishment or something like that, we say, well, I'm not going to treat my kids like that, you know? And I've had to make those actual decisions not to do things the way I was raised. And there have been times when, you know, it's been an actual aha moment, if you will, that this is my opportunity where God's saying, okay, you said you're going to change things. Cause I'm a transitional parent, you know, my parents got divorced. So I didn't have a set of grandparents for most of my life. Mm. And I certainly didn't have a mother. So my goal is for my children who don't have a full set of grandparents, obviously. My goal is for their children to have grandparents, mm-hmm. and obviously to have parents, you know, the natural set of parents, if you will, you know, that the husband and wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions. Well, what if I can't have children? What about adopting? You know, does that still make me not? Look, St. Joseph didn't, you know, he adopted Jesus, right? You know, talk about a job. You know, there's so many opportunities. There are kids out there who need dads, you know. We moved into this house 10 years ago, and right across the street was a young man the same age as my oldest boy, who was, he reminded me a lot of me. Uh-huh. When growing up, we would call him juvenile delinquent, you know, and, you know, always belligerent stuff. In fact, he came in and I noticed spray paint cans, missing from my garage, you know, and he wasn't painting. And, you know, so there was a bit of a conflict across the way. His mom was a single mom, had two daughters. And it's just a mess. It's just a mess, you know? But I stood my ground, towed the line, you know, and I wouldn't put up with his behavior. And I was the only one who challenged him. And he went off and, came back. And came up to me. I was sitting on my patio one day, and he came up to me and he said, you know, he kind of poked his head around the corner, you know, can I talk to you? You know,
right.
I didn't know I was going to, you know, shoot him, you know? And I said, sure, what's up? And he said, and I said, look, I'm sorry.
Mm.
And, you know, he tried to explain what he was sorry for, but, you know, a kid wrapping up, you know, a third of his life, you know, in an apology that's uncomfortable. You know, I said, thank you. And I accept your apology and I forgive you. And it was a short 2-minute conversation. And we shook hands. He walked away. I wound up over that summer giving him a ride to a couple places and that stuff. And he decided he was going to go off and join the Marines, be a sharpshooter.
Yeah.
And, you know, things changed. He wound up not, you know, but I could have just ignored him for those 6-7 years that he was here. I could have just said, well, that's the neighbor kid. You know, he's just, you know, it's not my responsibility,
right.
You know, but we are our brother's keeper. I didn't move to this house just to be in a void, be in a vacuum. And yeah, you know, I'm the guy who, when, you know, construction workers, which I used to be, are sitting in the Dairy Queen, you know, dropping F-bombs, you know, during lunch in a family restaurant, I'll go up to them and I'll say, gentlemen, I know it's a rough day. It's hot out there and stuff, but, you know, you're dropping F-bombs, and they'll always say, oh, we didn't even realize it, of course,
yeah.
You know, we'll tone it down. They always do.
Yeah.
You know, but how many men become mice and don't, and aren't our brother's keeper? Because these guys don't want to be like this around families either.
Right.
You know, sure, we all have a good time when, again, yeah, put a bunch of boys together, things about, put a bunch of guys together. They're going to be sitting on the patio, you know, outdoing each other. Right.
Right.
But the small M has taken over, you know, and it is a title. It is a responsibility. It's a duty, and it's an honor.
Mm-hmm.
It's an honor to be called, to be a man, to be a husband, to be a dad, to be a priest, it's an honor to be called who you are supposed to be. We all have that honor waiting for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that discernment takes a while. We got to be quiet. God doesn't shout, you know, he's in the whisper. And that took a lot of doing for me, you know, stopping to open my mouth, you know, not opening my mouth anymore, you know, making sure that, you know, my mouth didn't embarrass more than just my face, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's definitely there's a responsibility that comes with that. And I think that's something that we've lost over time in our own society with, you know, whether it's, you know, fear of quote unquote persecution, which is, you know, a word that is used now that has no meaning versus what it actually means, you know, in our Western society. But, you know, that responsibility of teaching boys, especially younger boys, younger men, you know, just those little nuggets that you can give. I was talking to a buddy of mine. He's got a young daughter who's probably 10, and he was talking about teaching her about men in that context and talking about dating and all that. And Dennis Rainey put out a book. Oh, it's probably 15, 20 years ago, but it was called, mm-hmm. you know, Interviewing My Daughter's Dates. And the whole premise of this was not intimidation, not, you know, shotgun on the wall, you know, all of that stuff. But it was teaching young men how to be men in context of wanting to date my daughter. And building those relationships and those kind of relationships, if you've got a daughter, are, you know, great. If you've got sons, obviously that's direct. If you've got your son's friends, not all those friends are going to have fatherly influences like you were talking about.
That's right.
You know, and so that gives us, you know, my friend does big brothers, big sisters. You know, he's a big brother. That's a formal way to do it. But really, just what you're talking about, how can you be influenced into other, you know, boys' lives? When we go to church or like even out in public, if there's a little kid that, little boys especially, God gave me girls for a reason. I would have really struggled to raise boys because I was one, I am one, and I was a, you know, it was just a good fit for me to have girls.
Well, it's the same reason I got boys, you know, like yeah. Didn't get girls.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we're kind of designed in that way, but to use that, like, I will correct boys in public. I'm like, hey, man, knock it off. You're not, this is, you know, and I've had people that appreciate that and have people that don't always appreciate that, but it is a responsibility to get, and I, we've talked about this with other guests that I can't imagine being a young man in today's society. First of all, they don't even know how to, like, the media's, they're trying to redefine even what that means. So like, they don't know who they are. They're the worst of the worst. They're the dumb, bungling people. Like, I just, it's just a difficult place to be. So for those of us, especially that are, you know, that are kind of my target audience with Maxed Out Man, which is, you know, 40 plus, these guys that are kind of, you know, have a little more experience and all that, it's kind of our responsibility to push that forward and to help these kids.
Yeah. You know, and I'm that 40 plus demographic. When I discovered, stumbled upon, finally woke up to, whatever, saw this idea, philosophy, whatever you might call it. Yeah. I tell my sons that if I ever see them going on a date and not opening the door for the girl, I'm going to go out to the car and tell him to drive you home because he's not the guy for you.
Yeah.
I open the door for my wife. My sons do. We behave that way in public. It's not a show. It's who we are. Mm-hmm. And that when there's that behavior, like you were talking about, I don't know how many times I've been walking around in the grocery store and little kids pestering his mom. and I either I'm talking to him or I'm, you know, right at his eye level or whatever. I say, is that your mama? He says, yes. Don't talk to her that way. Okay. Yeah. And you see this look of, well, thank you. Well, you know, she might be struggling with two or three others, you know?
Right.
And I've got a friend. He's just turned 87, retired colonel in the Army. He used to jump out of airplanes, you know. And I've seen him do this, and I learned it from him. Little kids get out into the aisle in church, and they'll run down the aisle. Well, he just leans out, and he snaps his fingers, points at them, and does that. And they look at him, and, I mean, it's like that little truck in Star Wars, you know, takes off, you know. And we have that responsibility. If we don't teach our own children, then we don't have any credibility, you know, outside. And it reminds me of a speech that Rich DeVos did. And he was one of the founders of Amway. And this speech was called Selling America. And it was given in 1967, I think, to a bunch of junior achievement kids in Canada.
Yeah.
And these are junior high schoolers, right? And he gets on the stage, and there's 1,000 plus there. And he says, you know, how many of you want to change the world? And they're all, yeah, yeah. How many of y'all want to make a difference? Yeah, yeah. How many of y'all want to clean up the world and, you know, make everything better? And he said, yeah. He said, okay, let me ask you a question. And he said, is your room clean?
Mm.
And it's just a silence, of course, the laughter, but then the silence. And he said, think about it. How can you fix the world if you don't have your own life fixed? If you can't clean up your own room, how can you clean up the world?
Yeah.
You know, and it's simple. We're all hypocrites to some point, you know, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely.
We, you know, splinter in your eye, beam in mine. It's very easy to criticize someone else or to even say, well, don't treat me that way, even though I'm treating you the same way. You know, it's all by example. I can't fix the world. I can't really do anything for 8 billion people, except give them three men.
Uh-huh.
And if those men become husbands and dads, or if they become single leaders or priests or deacons, brother, whatever, my purpose, our first purpose as dads, if you will, is to love their mother,
uh-huh,
and to raise them to be men, and to tell them when they are men.
Uh-huh.
My father never did that. And it took some soul searching for me to realize that I am a man. After a lot of note taking, I used to follow my father-in-law, my future father-in-law, around with a notepad, taking notes on how he was doing it.
Wow. Yeah.
But it wasn't really until after I, you know, started the man, husband, dad stuff that I realized that I was a man.
Yeah.
You know, and that even though I hadn't been told that, I was affirmed by other men in my community. It's very difficult. It's difficult for a single mom to do that for her boys, just as difficult as it would be for me to raise daughters on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not one.
Right.
You know, I was a Cub Scout leader, and a woman brought her son to Cub Scouts, and you know, I asked her why she was doing it. She's a single mom. She said, "Well, because I don't know how to be a man."
Mm.
And I said, "All right, would you be the assistant den leader?" She said, "Okay," you know. And we went from there, you know, and. But what a gift she gave her son to put him around other men. We become like those who we associate with.
Right.
That's a natural law. That's why we tell our kids, don't go hang out on the street corner with those gang members. Why? Because you'll become a gang member.
Right.
It's simple math, right? Well, if that is true, then then it's true that if you hang out with, and this is what I learned in the Amway situation. I started hanging out with millionaires and people who love their wives,
mm-hmm,
you know, you know, say what you will, whatever the stigma was or is, I don't know. I haven't been involved for 20 years, but you know, there were, I learned from good people,
mm-hmm,
and they made me read a new book every month, you know? And that sticks with you.
Yeah,
reading is really important because it's something about reading that sticks in you, you know. And I get a little passionate about it. I don't know if that shows.
Yeah. That's. I mean, I think you made a good point with the. You know, I've talked about it on the podcast before that I open, unless there's a physical reason I can't, I open my wife's door every time. And that's just one of those things that I do to show her respect and care and honor her and all those. So for the guys that are listening to this, if you're not currently doing this, start.
She'll love it. And if she says, you know, I don't need my door open for you, you say, well, I need to open your door for you. You know, yeah. I need that. You know,
yeah.
My wife waits by the door.
Yeah, mine too, most of the time. So yeah, and my wife is like yours, kind of, you know, I call her a badass because she's a cake decorator, welder, off-road racer. She does all this crazy, crazy stuff, but she still allows me to open my door. So, yeah, so that's part of being a husband. And that capital H husband, my kids, you know, I always use the Bill Cosby, who's, you know, kind of on the outs now, but he had a great line that he's...
That doesn't make his truth. He has truth.
Yeah, and he had this great line where he said, hey, don't mess with me. I'll make two more just like you.
That's right.
To his kids.
At the end of this world, I can take you out.
That's right. And my kids, I used to joke and tell my kids that, but they knew that mom always came first. Like that's, you know, that, and that relationship is what built the rest of our family. And so, hey, I think this has been awesome. I think you've really offered a lot of insight, and I just love the concept of man, husband, dad. And so where are we going to find you? We're going to, you know, holyownandoperated.com and manhusbanddad.com, or how else?
Go to manhusbanddad.com too. I think that actually directs to the man, husband, dad stuff on the website. It may not. That's been a transition over the last year. and it was a big site that we're moving over to this other big site.
Yeah.
I say we. Who's the tech guy?
Yeah, you.
Yeah, so wholly owned and operated. That's H-O-L-Y, owned and operated, .com. And I can be emailed at my first name, you know, in front of all that, Christopher. And I think they'll see on the video or something that, you know, my name's spelled differently.
Yeah, I'll put that. I'll put those in the show notes and all that, too.
Yeah, you know, this has been great. I really love what you're doing. You had your neighbor, 90 plus years old, on. And like my 87 year old friend, when his name is Kevin, as a matter of fact, when he and I, we have breakfast once a month. And when he talks, I got nothing.
Yeah.
I got nothing to offer this guy. You know, everything he says is wisdom, you know, even if it isn't, you know, what do I have to offer to him? You've got, you know, your 90-year-old neighbor, who's twice as old as, you know, the demographic that you're shooting for.
You know,
we have to listen to that, listen to him over and over again. I hope you have him back. You know, I know you mentioned at the end, it'd be good to come back. I think for all these,
he always jokes with me. We did a Bible study with him last night. We do it every Tuesday, and he's like, "Well, if I live that long, you know, we could do it again in a couple of months." I mean, he's 92. He's very pragmatic. It's hilarious. But yeah, I definitely want to have Fred back on. And that's episode like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So go back and listen to that.
All these guys that you've had, you know, it would make a great club or something like that. You know, you add a new member every week, you know, because, and as I mentioned in our lead up, you know, to getting this scheduled and stuff like that, I used to swear like a sailor, not to, you know, demean sailors, you know, but I don't. But at the same time, I accept that, you know, people use language. That doesn't, like with the Bill Cosby thing, you know, a person can speak the truth and still be anything, you know, anything good or bad. Truth is truth with the capital T, you know.
Right.
And I imagine these group of guys that you've got, you know, on your episodes, sitting around smoking a cigar, having some good whiskey, and there's where you change the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's three boys at a time. It's a couple girls at a time. It's, you know, one-on-one, you know, and however many people are listening to this, but men being men and standing up and saying, this is what a man is. And that's what you've had on all your episodes. You've had men. Listening to them, I've gotten the sense that they are who they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and none of them are faking it till they make it, you know. Now, sometimes you got it, sure, but they are who they're supposed to be. They're very real, very authentic. And you can tell a man who is who he's supposed to be because you can depend on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because and that's what you've got and what you're creating here. I think it's a great thing that you're doing.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been really interesting. It's been fun, and to be able to, you know, build these friendships around the world and continue to just kind of grow this. And it's funny because, you know, the tagline for Maxed Out Man is, you know, helping you become the man you were made to be. Right.
That's what did intrigue me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we really are striving for is to, you know, you don't have to be perfect, just like you're talking about. You're on that road. You're trying to become who you were made to be. You're trying to become who, figure out who that is. Right. Like that's the challenge. So I really appreciate you coming on board. And look forward to future conversations and growing relationship and all that. So, you know, give our best to Beth, and sounds like she's an awesome woman as well.
Oh, she is. She asked me to marry her, and I jumped at the opportunity.
I get it. All right, Christopher, thanks so much.
Thanks, Kevin. God bless you.
You too.
If you're looking to really maximize your life and become the man you were made to be, head over to maxedoutman.com and get your journey started today.